Everybody calm. Everybody center. Happy fucking happy hour. Oh my God. It's Richard fucking Schiff. It's Emmy Award winning. You know what? I'm just going to live in a world. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to live in a world where Toby is actually the communications director at the White House. That's what I'm going to do, Travis. I'm not even going to look at him yet. Toby is not Hope Hicks.
Well, there's a vacancy right now.
Is that okay. The only change you're going to make?
Oh, hi, Richard Schiff.
You have a wish?
No. Martin Sheen is president, and he's married to Sam Waterston, and everything's fine.
Now you're just mashing all the shows up, Steph.
And the good doctor does not have a fucking brain tumor, and everything's fine. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Not very good. How are you?
I can tell. That was a rhetorical question. I'm well, considering the end of days is here.
Yes. We just had obviously President Bartlett on Martin Sheen, and you guys must hear this all the time. This is why I'm sure, for many reasons, beside the fact that it's an unbelievable show, but that, you know, the West Wing is exploded now with, you know, kids on Netflix, because it's bizarro world. It's a parallel universe to the Trump administration, right?
I wouldn't say it's parallel. It's an alternative universe.
Yes.
But there's nothing parallel about it, I don't think.
Yeah.
On the West Wing thing, it's pretty amazing. Entire new generations, almost every election cycle, but especially now, that people are melancholy and forlornly reminiscing about when we had democracy in this country.
Yeah.
And when there were people in the Oval Office who actually wanted to leave the world a better place than how they found it, and we're not experiencing that right now.
I feel like this will be the most crying of any happy hour.
It could be.
You were the Hope Hicks of the West Wing. Now, was there ever a scene written by Aaron Sorkin where you pressed President Bartlett's pants while he was still in them? Was that? That was apparently.
Have you heard that story?
Hope Hicks' duties.
Hope Hicks
that was one of Hope
Hicks'
duties.
Pants while he was standing there,
steaming his pants.
In them,
steaming his pants.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what we're gonna call it.
No, with a steamer.
Okay.
As the kids are calling it.
Do I have a comment for that? I don't think so.
Question is, no, you never steamed Martin Sheen's pants while he was wearing them.
Not that I recall. No, I'm taking the fifth.
So I was just telling you, I got a lot of deep state reconnaissance from Eliza Fitzgerald, our mutual good friend from the West Wing, on you. But I know, I remember being at a supermarket with her, and there was like a teenage guy that was like, are you Carol from this way? And he didn't even have like hair on his balls. It was really, but it is really like the world we all wish to live in now. Mm.
Yeah, we get that all the time on the Twitterverse. Still, even though I'm on another TV show that is apparently very popular.
Apparently, I'm smelling another Emmy for Richard Schiff. Is what the talk is here in Hollywood?
Are they saying that?
That's what they're saying
in the supermarkets and in the coffee.
Please don't die of a brain tumor. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that a spoiler alert?
If you didn't watch the finale, you need to catch up.
Okay, sorry.
That was on Monday.
It's no longer a spoiler.
That's right. It was on Monday.
It's too late. Available to anyone who wants to see me die.
Everything was almost great, and he was the communications director in the White House, and Martin Sheen was president, and now he's in prison with Alfre Woodward, and he has a brain tumor.
Woodard.
Right. My point is, isn't the roles you're playing now, it's like a facsimile of what's happened to our lives since Donald Trump has become president.
I did. There were a couple of roles I played that were very Trumpian. On Rogue, I played a malevolent, kind of vicious lawyer, murderer.
Yeah. And still, wouldn't work for Donald Trump.
Which no one saw, but it was very much a precursor to what we have in the White House. Yeah, we got I don't know.
What a shit show, Richard. What a fucking shit show. I'm sorry. I'm a little cross, but this is Trump's America.
And there are no FCC rules, so you can't swear if you feel the need to get something out and off your chest.
Say again?
You can swear, so if you need to get something out and off your chest.
Janet Sheen warned us. She's like, Martin's Catholic. He doesn't swear. I have to say all the fucks for him. She's the one that gave us those T-shirts. Trump grabbed me by the country.
Not only that, but Martin's eyes pop out of his head when you curse.
Yeah.
He's very, very...
Oh, no,
very
he gave Catholic. Me rosaries, so I felt a little fucking bad about fucking swearing.
Isn't he the most amazing man you've
ever seen? Well, you and him. Also, after the happy hour, he was like, can we watch Rachel Maddow together?
Uh-huh.
I was like, yeah. How much could I auction this off for a liberal to watch Rachel Maddow with President Bartlett?
That was a life moment.
Oh, by the way, Emilio Estevez, we had him on happy hour, and he said, ask Richard Schiff, because we were like, your dad's a good eater. And he's like, ask Richard Schiff about watching him eat. Because he...
Was he not was shy.
He was hungry.
Watching Martin eat?
Yes, Martin is a good eater.
This is a story I tell. The first time I met Martin was on the set of The West Wing.
Right.
And it was the pilot, and it was the very famous scene where I'm in a fight with the religious right.
Right.
And
Fantastic.
He busts open the double doors and announces, what is the first line? I am the God, thou art in heaven, something. Anyway, very biblical, whatever he says.
Pour out thou in heaven.
He's quoting the Bible.
Yeah.
And then he makes, if you remember the scene, he makes this walk around around the room. He makes this kind of circle around the religious right and the rest of us that are sitting there.
Yeah.
So he would come in, make this pronouncement.
Right.
This great entrance.
Yeah.
And then make that walk. And you know,
right.
The camera was over my shoulder to Martin.
Yeah.
But whenever Martin, whenever I saw him after a take, he would come back from craft service with two cheeks full of chicken.
And he's so spelt.
And grease all over his face. And start talking and rubbing his hands and wiping his face. And he would make me laugh. And
right.
And he'd actually start the rehearsal of the next take with a mouth full of chicken.
Right.
And every single time there was a break, he would go and stuff his cheeks with chicken.
That's how I experienced him is like a presidential chipmunk, like stuffed with chicken. Because, no, that's what I said to Amelia. I'm like, that's what we had. We had chicken skewers.
Yeah.
But so the point being is that I was now in full laughing mode, which is a thing I got on the West Wing quite often, where I would shut down the set for 45 minutes because I got the giggles. And so I was already in the pilot, having done that two or three times, very conscious of trying not to slow us down again.
Right.
So Martin would come in, make the big entrance. Camera was over my shoulder.
Right.
And I'd already, I was crying, trying to hold back the laughter. And then he started his walk, and the camera would come off my shoulder, and I would run into the Oval Office and exhale
right.
and let the tears come and
right.
let my shout quietly into my armpit so that no one would hear me, and then time it so that I would make it back to my spot as he settled back into the position
right.
and the camera would be back over my shoulder.
Sure.
So every single time he
You're
made
like,
that move.
Everybody just hang on, camera move.
I had
Richard
to
Schiff
run
get his shit together and go.
Out of the room.
Camera three, go.
Laugh for 37 seconds. Run back in. Yeah, that was my first
introduction. Yeah, he's a really good eater. God bless him. God bless President Bartlett. Here's the thing that this really is extraordinary. Isn't it in the history of television how close this cast is? And what good friends you all still are, and how you will do anything. Melissa's like, please ask him to talk about how great he is with Justice for Vets, which she is heading up. Like, you guys do anything for... I saw you in a hilarious thing with Allison Janney for Mom, talking about the walk and talk. And like, why do we have to walk when we talk? Oh, it's boring when we stand still. Like, it's just... But you guys... I mean, I've never seen... And then you just did this great new PSA about voting in the midterms all together. What... I've never – have you? I've never seen anything like that with a cast that stays friends and does all this great stuff together for years and years.
I hear the cast of Deep Throat stayed very close.
Really?
Over the
Do
years.
You? Really? Mm-hmm. That's an interesting fun
I don't
fact,
know if
Richard.
That's actual true.
I think that's bullshit, Richard. Anyway, let's move on.
To answer your question, it's extraordinary how much we adore each other. And it's like a family that comes back together. With no resentments and no bad history, it's pretty remarkable. And so, whenever anyone of us has a favor to ask of the others to get together and do a PSA or to work with Melissa and Justice for Vets, whatever it is,
but you've done an extraordinary amount for her and for veterans.
Absolutely. Well, it's a fantastic organization that she does, and it's irrefutably right. you know, to have alternative courts to keep people who are nonviolent offenders, in this case veterans, but really it should be for all nonviolent offenders around the country, and these alternative courts are spreading. But to be able to help an organization that helps vets re-straighten their path, and nine times out of ten, they stay out of jail and become very productive members of their community. And, I mean, how
so can we talk about a president who dodged the draft five times, insulted a war hero? I don't know. Where else? Travis, where are we today? Oh, he tried to steal money from the military to build his wall.
Well, and he's also trying to shut down or privatize the Veterans Administration, which is very important.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, well, he only serves 20 million Americans, and he's trying to. And he put a doctor in charge of it. That as well. What?
Right. And he put a doctor in charge of it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, his personal doctor that says he's 242 pounds.
That's the least offensive thing he's done to me so far. The doctor apparently is a decent man.
No, I'm sure the doctor is a wonderful man. He's probably a very, very good doctor.
Whether he can run that organization or not is the question, of course.
The biggest organization. That's the biggest branch.
Never run anything. What about that? West Wing, all about people that are dedicated to public service. I mean, none of these people believe in it. They are there to blow up the things they're in charge of.
He has said out loud, along with Steve Bannon and Miller and all those guys, they have said out loud, recorded, that they believe in destroying the state. That's what they've said, and that's what they're doing. They don't believe in government. They don't believe in this democracy. It's very clear and it's very obvious, and that's what they're doing. They're gutting the State Department. They're trying to get rid of health care. They're trying to get rid of Medicaid. Everything that he's doing is to destroy what's taken so long to build. And I always use the analogy, you know, how long does it take to build a beautiful sandcastle? And how long does it take an 8-year-old to destroy it?
I saw you said that, and I thought that was so apropos.
And that's what it is. He's an 8-year-old who's just destruction is his only...
Because it's only over a year. And we're like, how long is it going to take to repair this country from the damage he's already done? And Bolton, Melissa was saying this weekend, that, like, we can repair domestic. If he fucking blows us up in a nuclear fucking holocaust because of Mueller or whatever, like, how do we come back from that? How do we come back from, you know...
Well, the answer is there is no coming back from that.
It's terrifying. Okay, so...
But you have to go back, though, a little bit. You have to go back, I think, that with the things that have allowed this to happen. Because what's really shocking is that Republican representatives in Congress and Senate do not stand up for the faith that we need to have in these institutions for them to work properly. It's being shown how fragile this system really is when somebody is there who's willing to break all known ethical and moral rules. But you have to go back to Citizens United, and you have to go back to what many of us called the end of democracy back then, because clearly these Republicans are owned outright by the combination of the NRA and the Mercers and the Koch brothers, and they're not going to stand up on principle, and principle is now irrelevant.
Yeah. You
know? So you go back to the 2000 election and how that was, in my opinion, stolen.
You see that have
been taken to set up what's possible now.
Yeah. You
know? And without Citizens United, the Republicans are going to stand up to this president. But since they're all paid for, and we're talking about millions and millions of dollars put into their campaigns and probably they're set up after they leave office and so on and so forth, there seems to be no chance that they're going to do the right thing.
Yeah. No, that's what I've said. They're cowards.
But is this something that the kids in Parkland are doing right now? They're calling out, like, you know, you're taking NRA money.
Kicking ass,
they're
taking names.
They're starting to call people out for the stuff that the adults haven't done.
Parkland are phenomenal. And it's going to, you know, you wonder, coming from a generation that seemed to change the world for better back in the 60s, at least they stood up to the establishment, as it were, stopped a war in Vietnam, caused the end of one president and helped the ending of another president, Johnson and Nixon. there were movements that civil rights and women's movement and the beginning of the gay and lesbian movement and all of that stuff back then. And where have the young generations been all these years since then? This generation seems to me to be ready to take up the baton.
This is why I love the this latest thing you guys did. What was it called? The Let America Vote. This is all you guys. I mean, all the West Wing cast did a. This is for voting in 2018. And I love my favorite is Allison at the end said, "I'm Allison fucking Janney. I won an Oscar. Let America Vote." In honor of Allison, I'm wearing pajama jeans today because that's how I found out about them. Because I went to her house once and I was like, "Those are fantastic." She goes, "They're pajamas."
And she would say it with that kind of excitement.
She was really excited about it. They're pajama jeans. Because you're family and because, but I love this PSA. You guys have done a ton of that. How do all those come together? Because you all legitimately share these passionate liberal causes that we're not just, you know, it's funny. It's all this talk of, you know, the Roseanne show now and, you know, like, first of all, there's a talk about a West Wing reboot. Let's talk about that. Is that a possibility?
Anything's a possibility. I think I had a great idea for it, actually, that I shared with Aaron Sorkin, which he loved. Who knows if that's the idea that he'll end up using. But he also said that he's pretty busy. He's, you know, these writers book up 2-3 years in advance.
Yeah.
We're all very busy.
All of you are pretty busy.
The odds of it getting together are slim, but very, very possible. And I think we all would love to do it in some version. Of course, we're not going to go back and be 90-year-old, you know, communication directors. But some version.
I know Martin and Allison's that are like, we're too old now. This belongs to young, idealistic kids.
No, exactly right.
Martin just said recently with the Roseanne thing, he said, what did he say? He said he wouldn't rule it out. He said, I've been getting a lot of fan mail about people that have discovered the show in recent months. He said in the last year and a half, the reaction to the West Wing has been phenomenal. I think it's been a source of inspiration, comfort to a lot of people, in essence, a parallel universe.
And there's a way to use some of the old cast, if not all of us, to regenerate or to generate a new version.
Why not meld it all, Richard? Martin Sheen is married to Sam Waterston. You have a brain tumor, although it's workable, right?
Jane Fonda is
his ex-wife.
And Brad is a cross-dresser?
Yes.
I mean, is a cross-dresser.
Jane Fonda is still a war protester, which is fantastic. Come on, work with me.
Listen.
My friend Lily Tomlin on the West Wing. Come on, let's go. She just did the happy hour. Come on.
But get back to Roseanne for a second. Did you watch it?
I did not. He did.
I
saw clips. Everybody has a different opinion.
There are things about that I find compelling. And there are things about that I find fantasy land, you know, like would that family be that accepting of, you know, a gender fluid youth or.
Well, it took him a minute.
Right. But their reaction was honest because it's like it's ours. So we're going to protect him, which I think is part of the reason why we've talked about this with the gay rights movement.
I had one person
that people understood it.
I had one person that compared it, Richard, to All in the Family and said, I feel like it actually skewed more to the left, and then I had another person said, no, they made the liberal characters look ridiculous. That, you know, Roseanne and, you know, John Goodman are, you know, the solid American, whatever, just care about jobs, and the liberals are the ridiculous characters. Like, I didn't see it. I only saw clips. And I thought the same thing just from the clips from the original is that John Goodman and Laurie Metcalf are extraordinary actors. You know, that's what made it work the first time. Mm-hmm. And
I kind of loved it. I watched them last night. Yeah. I watched the two. I didn't know there were two. There were two of them. I kind of loved it. First of all, it's the family dynamic and the dysfunction of the family.
My mom's a 95-year-old Trump voter.
It reminds me of my current in-laws because they're from Western Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Montana, Tennessee. But also, I was married once before for a minute and a half and was very, very, very much... I loved those in-laws.
Yeah.
And I'm still in touch with my ex, who is the poet laureate of Montana, by the way.
Wow.
Cheryl Nothe is her name, a brilliant poet. And we've been in touch, and we visited her and her choir marshal husband, Bob. And
her Husband's name is Fire Marshal Bob.
But they have no. He's a fire marshal whose name is Bob.
There was a character on In Living Color called Fire Marshal Bob.
Who's, by the way, I didn't know that. But by the way, Bob has
it's Bill. I think
Bob is right. Bob is the fire marshal of Missoula, Montana, with hair down to his ass.
Yeah.
And I said to him when I visited them, you know, how do you get away with that being a fire marshal? And he tells this beautiful story. It's after 9/11. He went to New York to help out.
Yeah.
And he met this Rastafarian. A fireman from the Bed-Stuy house, and they lost a lot of guys, which I know for a fact. And he was so moved by the story to honor him, he decided to never cut his hair again. But that's the kind of guy he is. But that household has a son-in-law in the basement. I mean, a son in the basement,
yeah.
Who's now 50 who or more, 55, who's always lived there, is kind of a ne'er-do-well, done some time in prison.
Yeah,
who has an African American child?
Yeah,
and the two parents kind of accepted the African American mm-hmm. child, similar to Roseanne.
Yeah,
and the it's a working class. He was a farmer, lost his farm, and ended up being a mechanic in Minneapolis in town. Wonderful man in his way. Craziness in the family from the old farm days. Minnesota
yeah.
being a tough state for
yeah.
all kinds of abuse and all that stuff. And it reminds me of that household in many ways, and how surprisingly accepting people can be when they get close
yeah.
to mm-hmm. a situation, and when it's not something foreign and not something far away and not something they can judge without
yeah.
the personal experience. So anyway, the long way around saying that I buy it.
Yeah.
And Roseanne. Yeah. I love the
well, great writers. I mean, Wanda Sykes.
Whitney Cummings.
Whitney Cummings. I mean, you know,
Sarah
same thing they had the first time. Sarah Jessica.
And John Pasquin or,
excuse
is directing
me, not Sarah,
again.
Melissa, yeah.
No, there's a very...
Sarah Gilbert, sorry.
Sarah Gilbert was just beautiful.
Yeah. yeah.
She was sitting there
well,
on
they're
the couch.
All great actors. That's why that show was so brilliant. And I said Richard today on the show, I'm like, you got to... give somebody props that has a huge hit series 20 years after the first one.
Not only that, though, but talking about the Trump aspect of it. You know, I am maybe, I don't know how many of us there are, but I'm fascinated with the Trump phenomenon in terms of the people that voted for him.
I would say more horrified, but yes, fascinated.
And very curious about those that still support him despite all the evidence of for reasons that they shouldn't anymore.
That he's a fucking traitor, gelatinous grift weasel.
Just this feeling of being left out. Just this feeling of the last 40, 50 years of progressive movements.
Yeah.
And the white middle class, or less than middle class, blue-collar worker who turns on the news and never hears anything about them. Never, right? To the point where there's Black Lives Matter and there's women's movement and there's LGBTQQS mm-hmm. element of P. Right. And if I'm in that boat, at some point I'm going to feel like I'm the other now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one that's no one is talking about. And that someone, sadly it was Donald Trump, who I think is abusing that connection.
Yes. Yeah.
But
he doesn't. He doesn't care about those people. So.
Of course, that.
What no. I would say is fuck them because they. I mean, honestly, if you're surprised now that he's a racist, sexist, homophobic, horrible traitor, then you're not paying attention.
Well, you're not paying attention, or you're watching the wrong channel, and that's yeah. also the other issue is
yeah.
that you have a state-run propaganda
yes.
News channel, and so they're not getting.
My mom watches it. It was heartbreaking. My
yeah,
mom
my
is 95, watch. Richard. My dad ran with Barry Goldwater in 64. It is heartbreaking.
He ran with Barry Goldwater.
Yes.
Oh, my
God. It is heartbreaking.
That's your
to
dad?
Think, yes. It's heartbreaking to think that she would think my dad or Goldwater would be happy about what's happened at their
of
party.
Of course they wouldn't. You would call Barry
he
Goldwater.
He was a prosecutor at Nuremberg. They have two fucking active Nazis running in. That have won the Republican primary in two states.
Don't you think that Goldwater would walk up to Trump and just kick his ass at this point?
Yes.
I mean, Goldwater was called the real conservative,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Little nuts, but
he spoke out for pro-gay rights, pro-choice in the 80s on the Senate floor.
Right.
His grandson's gay. I know him. I'm good friends with him. Like, I mean, it's just the whole thing is I can't even articulate some days like how far from normal this is, right? What we're going through.
There's no normal in the equation. No.
So, all right. The West Wing, the voting rights thing, because that's the other thing, is they can't seem to fucking win except for cheating. So you guys did this Let America Vote. PSA, all of you, right, from the West Wing, about the midterms, encouraging people to fight against voter suppression. I'm like, why do you need Russia and voter suppression and, you know, all of this if you are winning the war of ideas? But they're not.
Yeah, well, you know, it's tricky because you got to go back to the days when the Democrats used trickery and deception and, you know, and the old stories about Lyndon Johnson in Texas, you know, all of a sudden every cousin in the state.
I'm with you on Lyndon Johnson because he beat my father. He was a fucker, man.
Well, I mean, the Democratic Party. Look, John F. Kennedy doesn't win Illinois and therefore the election without the help of the mafia in Illinois, correct?
Yeah.
So this is it's the history of our democracy, sadly, is one that you cheat as much as you can get away with. So let's make sure that this form of cheating, which is the most recent, is adjudicated is made so it can't happen again.
But I loved your message.
But if you can cheat, you will, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's the way it works.
You said recently, Donald Trump has lived his whole life.
You said recently,
no doubt. By the way, anyone from New York knew 40 years ago that this guy was a fraud, a crook.
Thank you.
By the way, he's the reason why New York real estate became so expensive that New Yorkers couldn't live there. Why? Because Russian oligarchs were funneling in money because they had nowhere else to put it in the 90s into New York real estate, including into Trump Tower.
Yeah.
And a number of them bought apartments in Trump Tower. And all of a sudden,
Trump Tower is like a goddamn building in the Ghostbusters. That's the fucking source of
and
all
how about
evil.
Kushner's building is the
right.
number of
666?
666, right?
Welcome to 666.
I've always been
really?
Building
they fucking, a, how much more out in the open could this be, Richard?
That like building has always spooked me. And when I found out that he's the one that bought it for $800 trillion dollars.
Jared, let me look in your hair. Oh, 666. Okay. So you recently said you would advise Trump to resign, knowing there's no compromising with a dictator who wants total and complete power. You're dealing with a cage match wrestler, and the rest of us are in a boxing match where there are rules. Isn't that the fucking truth? Like, there's no rules. Like, there is nothing. You're like, my 95-year-old mother, Richard, who was married to my very Catholic father, who never cheated for 40 years. Like, until he died, like, I'm like, it's okay to raw dog a porn star and a Playboy bunny while your third wife's giving, what the fuck? Like, what has happened to this party? It's just whatever Fox News tells them is okay now?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't even think that's the issue, but the point is that someone who does not care about the rules, someone who is addicted to and it's really a matter of addiction, if you ask me. It's an addiction to power. It's an addiction to winning by any means necessary.
Yeah.
I think it's actually why many people on the Trump side like him, because he's willing to do anything necessary in order to win.
Just because it makes liberals cry.
Well, I mean, think about it. There's nothing. So fire Mueller, sure, why not? And, you know, there's no tactic that he and that team won't resort to if it's going to get them a next step up.
You said a great thing in this interview. You said all of your work should be in removing this cancer from the body of our country. Get him out. I always think of the analogy about you were talking about the, you know, how long it takes to build a sandcastle and fucking kick it over. And I agree with you. There is no more important issue than free and fair elections, which we did not have. We had someone installed by a hostile foreign government that is not legitimate. And there is nothing. I love when they say another news. No. There's no other news. There's no other news.
There's no doubt that that's true. But you also have to look in the mirror, and the progressive, the Democratic side,
yes,
has to take responsibility for the fact that they didn't win by 60 points, because that's what should have been the margin of victory. And that there should never have been a contest.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and so part of it.
No one's ever been up against this much fuckery between Russia and, you know, WikiLeaks and the FBI. And
but isn't it fascinating how easy it is to kind of create the firestorm that gets everyone's attention and gets everyone into a frenzy from the McCarthy era, from other eras in this country's history, where. Yeah. Where someone can just start light a spark and a fire and a forest fire.
No, I mean they used Facebook and all that stuff against us. They use they and they're still doing it. They're still getting in there, starting the Bernie Hillary fights. They're starting the fights.
Who was behind both movements? Roy Cohn.
Yeah.
Roy Cohn in the McCarthy era, and Roy Cohn was Donald Trump's mentor.
Can we talk for a moment about how fantastic your wife is? So I met her at the Lawrence O'Donnell book party. First of all, I just love that your story is so actory that you met at auditions for Antigone. But that you were directing, that you had Angela Bassett in. And so was your wife auditioning to be in Antigone?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the story. There was a friend of mine who was a photographer at a studio on 28th Street in New York.
Yeah.
And I used to go there just to hang out sometimes and chit-chat. We knew each other from Colorado. And when I lived in Colorado for a year. And
Chopping firewood after you dropped out of college.
Yeah, I did.
You lived as a hippie for a while.
I tried.
Listen, kids, this is a cautionary tale.
I tried to live as a hippie, but they called me the splatter kid because I'd come in and cook burgers and frozen French fries, and they outlawed meat in the house. I couldn't.
Richard Schiff used to be Paul Bunyan, and now he's an Emmy Award winning actor. All right, go ahead, Richard.
So one day I went into this photography studio, and there was a picture of this gorgeous, beautiful young woman.
Yes.
Everywhere, splattered all over the walls.
Yes.
And of course I said, who is that?
Sheila.
And my friend Jonathan Pite said, is Sheila Kelly. She's a young dancer from NYU. Injured, and now she's becoming an actress, and you should audition her. So I went, yeah, I think you're right. So the next play I was doing was the Ennui version of Antigone, and she came into audition. She claims I came on to her, which might be true.
Whatever. Me too. What's next?
Yeah. No. I didn't. We didn't go to the Me
it
too.
Wasn't Me too.
No. It was just a friendly. I would really
Me too,
like
or I'll
marry
him and
you.
Have children with him.
And her response was yes, please.
No. She was so fascinating and incredible. But interestingly enough, we didn't really communicate very well. I didn't quite get where she didn't get me.
Yeah.
And then I ended up casting Angela Bassett in that part, and that was her first part out of Yale Drama School.
Right.
So Sheila was in the periphery. She came to the play, run into her, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I helped. She did an NYU film. I helped her carrying stuff on her building on 2nd Avenue in the Lower East Side.
Of course she did, because you want to get laid.
And said hi to her boyfriend who was watching the Knicks and smoking a cigar and blah, blah, blah. And anyway, I went off to Minneapolis and on a tour around the country trying to find other theaters outside of New York. I wanted to get out of New York. I wanted to break up with my girlfriend, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Of 9 years.
And get with Sheila. Yeah.
And so I met and fell in love with someone in Minneapolis.
Oh.
And it was kind of quiet, but she found out through the photographer. And I ran into her on the street, which you do in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I've never run into anyone on the street in L.A.
There's not that many people there.
And she goes, I hear you fell in love. And I went, yeah. And she goes, I want to meet her, which for some reason made sense. We were acquaintances. We weren't friends. And I went, okay. And the first person that my new love interest in Minneapolis named Cheryl met in New York was Sheila at the Chelsea Commons on 10th Avenue.
Wow.
We had brunch. And unbeknownst to any of us, I was having brunch with the two women I would marry.
Wow.
So that marriage.
That's an episode of something
The first marriage. The first marriage is Cheryl is someone who I still absolutely adore, but we were clearly not meant to be together.
Yeah.
Broke up fairly quickly. Years later, I'm out in L.A., and I started acting in my 30s. And the first movie
How's that gone for you?
First movie I got was with Emilio.
Emilio Estevez.
Young Guns 2.
Yeah.
Actually. And showed me a picture of the two of us on the set of The West Wing years later, of him holding a gun to my chin. and I went right to the accountant because I was broke. And the accountant was from Colorado. Her name was Karen Eisenstadt. We were talking about Colorado and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
She goes, you know, Sheila Kelly's in L.A. And she goes, Sheila's in L.A. I go, Sheila Kelly? She goes, yeah. I go, how do you know Sheila?
Hmm.
Sheila is my best friend. That's how she knows the photographer, Jonathan, and everybody. And I go, well, the three of us ought to get together.
Oh, wow.
So a month later, we met at Musso and Frank's.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the shit, man.
And she said, waving smoke out of her face at some point. she said, "You're really cute," which I interpreted as, "I would like to marry you."
Yes, and you did. She does, because I spoke to her at Lawrence O'Donnell's book party. And she is someone that makes you way over-indulge things about your personal life that you shouldn't. But anyway, I did. You know what I'm talking about.
She asks questions. That's
no, she's fantastic.
You know what she does? She asks one question,
she
and
asked
then 4 hours later,
and
she asks
crying,
the second question.
And I told her way too much stuff. But anyway.
Drink some more wine, Steph.
No, no. I'd had one glass. I just came from Hamilton. But she does S Factor, which is pole dancing, which is fantastic. But it's not just pole dancing, as you were saying. It's all about, like, sort of empowering women. It's an exercise thing, but it's become...
Well, it started out, you know, she produced and starred in a movie about strippers in Los Angeles. She was always fascinated with that underbelly world. And also the movement, having been a ballerina and a dancer, you know...
I'm going to say that's why Melissa Fitzgerald had a stripper pole in her apartment when we all first met her. Here on the Stephanie Miller Show.
As did Allison. And, yeah.
Yeah, Allison and Allison.
So she used to take me to strip clubs because she was researching this project, and to the point where I got bored going so often.
Yeah.
But every now and then you would see this one dancer, and they'd be phenomenally beautiful. And,
and
just this ecstasy. And so she was fascinated with that. And then she did the movie and learned it and actually went to a strip club, and I was there, but she... stripped in public.
I went to Jumbo's Clown Room, and I got very maternal. I was like, "Honey, you're so smart. Don't you want to go to law school? Can I help?"
Well, that if you sit down and hear all the stories, many of them did go
to
really
law school.
They're really smart. And the one common denominator is abuse. Almost every single stripper that we talk to.
Yeah. How much smarter is Stormy Daniels than Donald Trump? Whatever.
He has come from a very difficult background, and it's a way of in which they try to regain power of some sort. And, of course, as soon as money changes hands, they lose that power again. Anyway, Sheila was very fascinated with this whole thing and sexuality and all that stuff. So as an experiment, she started teaching five people. You know, she put a pole in my little office in the back when we were in this little house.
That must have been
house.
Horrifying to you, Richard.
Well, it blocked very the disturbing. TV, so I was a little disturbed by
it. Yes, sure.
And I thought the kids would bump into it. And so
yeah,
on.
Sure.
But as an experiment, you know, her friends would come over and go, "What's that?" And as an experiment, she's taught about five or six of her friends. And within 3 or 4 weeks, they were glowing. There were women I'd bear.
But it's about empowering women. Because when I went to Jumbo's Club with friends, I mean, my friend Rob asked me. I was like, "Oh, let's go." And they're beautiful. And it's not naked. You know, they're just, they're beautiful and they're dancing.
But
then when they have to crawl around for the dollars, bills, I was just like,
that's another ballgame.
Let's go to law school.
And that's another thing. And that's when the power gets taken away from them again.
Yeah.
But what Sheila does now, I mean, she invented the whole industry.
Yeah, I know. I know she did.
She was the first. But what she does now is take women on a journey through feminine movement, she calls it. The pole is irrelevant. Yeah. It's a part of it.
Yeah.
But it's really about learning to move again the way women were kind of meant to move and finding the curves and finding the femininity and the sensuality.
Yeah.
And what happens
it's about female empowerment, Richard. It really is.
Empowerment is part of it. But it's also a rediscovery.
Yeah.
And it's also about sensuality and sexuality and all those things.
You know what's interesting for me? I don't know if you know Shelley Wright, the country singer who came out as a gay. And she's like my good friend, and I call her my coming out coach. But she in her film and her book talks about the editor, New York saying like, "Oh, why are you dressing like you're trying to attract men and you're trying to," and she's like, "Fuck you." This is how I express my femininity, my sexuality, and we shouldn't all judge each other. Like, this is how this doesn't mean I'm trying to fuck a man. This means this is how if I want to present myself as feminine and sexual. And however, I mean, I just think that's so, particularly with the Me Too Time's Up movement, I mean, that's just so empowering.
Well, it's part of what Sheila is doing. You know, if you look at the feminist movement over the years, the first part of it was becoming like a man, right? It was becoming very linear,
right?
Dressing, walking stiffly, proving that you can do anything a man can do. And she kind of calls this part of the fourth wave of feminism, which is bringing back the fact that women are beautiful and the fact that and that they are
feminine.
And
embrace
feminine.
Your own sexuality, whatever it is. Yeah.
And whatever, however much masculinity or femininity you have in your body, let that be what it is.
Yeah.
and just discovering yourself again, you know, and
yeah.
And it's quite remarkable what women rediscover when they work with her.
Yeah.
You know, they go through some trauma. And
Melissa also told me you're the other big role model for you in terms of that. I think in terms of why you're such an amazing, strong, progressive man, she was saying your mom was a groundbreaking, you know, in a man's world back in her day. You first of all, we have something in common. You were born in Bethesda, Maryland. Guess where I was born? Bethesda, Maryland.
Get out of town.
I lived in Bethesda until I was three.
At the Naval Hospital?
Actually, no. I was born in D.C., but we lived in Bethesda.
Oh.
I just got an email from someone that's like, oh, we lived in your house on Radnor Road in Bethesda.
Oh, wow. I have no idea what Bethesda looks like.
I was only three when we moved back, so I don't remember Bethesda.
They were living in Falls Church. My father was in the Navy.
Okay.
We moved back to Brooklyn when I was 3 months old. So everyone in my family's from Brooklyn.
Okay.
So I still, to this day, have no idea what Bethesda, Maryland looks like.
I don't either. Melissa also, the last thing, said Yankees, huge Yankees fan, which I guess I could have known from your hat.
I've gotten texts they won today already.
But see, you identify more with New York than with Bethesda.
I have no identification with Bethesda whatsoever. It's on
neither
my passport. That's it. Although when I'm in D.C. and I've done plays in D.C. and I've been interviewed in D.C. and they're all very proud that a local boy made good, and I have to
me too.
Sadly,
I'm like I don't.
I have to correct them and go. I'm not really.
Didn't go to school here. Didn't.
I don't know where to find Bethesda, but I hear it's a very lovely town.
But so wait, let me just. You were the middle of three sons.
You were going to talk about my mother for a minute.
Of Edward, a real estate lawyer, and Charlotte, a cable TV and publishing executive, which is extraordinary for her age, era.
There's a couple of things about my mother. First, she was part of the original spearheading feminist movement. So we had Bella Abzug over at our house, and Gloria Steinem, and Bess Meyerson.
So you had a hat check, is what you're saying.
And
where do we put Bella Abzug's hat?
I don't think she ever took it off. I think she slept in it. And she also ended up, she started working when I was in public school at PS 87, and her first job she wanted nearby, so it was as a secretary at ABC News, which was down Columbus Avenue, the international news. And she worked her way up ended up becoming vice president of Manhattan Cable Television. Time Life owned it. Time Life sent her to Columbia Business School. And then she ended up going and working CBS Cable and worked with Bill Paley and all the stuff. But she also, dumped my father and married a guy named Clarence Jones. Clarence Jones, who I'm in touch with again now, was Martin Luther King's lawyer. Was civil rights lawyer.
Wow.
And so we had people at our house like...
I have that right here. Ask him about his mom's second husband.
And there was a woman named Florence Kennedy. I don't know if you remember that name, but she was a civil rights leader, became more of a feminist later in her life. Very brilliant woman, African-American woman, and she had a neck, some kind of issue. She would move like this. And I used to travel with her around town, what she would give speeches. For some reason, she took to me because, she liked how quiet I was or something. As a matter of fact, my ex-wife, years later, met Florence Kennedy, and I said, ask her about if she remembers me, and she said, oh yeah, I remember him, that quiet one, but she used to take me around the city. So when the Columbia students took over Columbia, I was on the dais, I was on the platform as Flo Kennedy spoke, and when the students rioted at George Washington, I was on the platform. So, and then with the New Haven Nine trial with Bobby Seale, I was up in New Haven. She took me everywhere, and just listening to her speak, she was an incredible speaker. And I learned a lot from her and from my stepfather, who was Martin King's lawyer. And by chance, wasn't on the balcony in Memphis. He was demanded by the Attica prisoners to be in the negotiating committee before they would sit down and negotiate.
Wow.
Editor and publisher of the Amsterdam News, and a brilliant lawyer, and who was the FBI was after for quite many years.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind
so
of...
So it was an interesting household to grow up in.
It's extraordinary that you guys have all found each other by happenstance, really, the West Wing cast, who you all are obviously fierce progressives and have done all these PSAs and work on campaigns. I know you're close to Biden, right?
Yeah, I got very close to Biden. I campaigned with him in 07 when he was running for president.
Yeah. And, what do you think about his threat to beat up the president and the president's threat to beat him up back?
Well, two things.
Do we feel like we just lowered the bar to this point?
My first reaction was, go ahead and kick his ass.
Yeah.
My second reaction was, you set yourself up for a lot of trash.
No, but but is this what's happened, that we've lowered the discourse now?
You remember
now,
when
to where everybody feels like they have to be Trump
You remember
now.
When
because Joe Biden's better
in
than
the Republican
that.
Primary, and when John Kasich was the one that was trying to stay above the fray
and
got no attention.
Right.
Then Rubio ended up going to, your hands are small, therefore, ... And I think because we go back to the no rules scenario of this guy's a way of interacting and debating, is he really just tries to pummel the crap out of you.
Right.
And at what point do you go, enough is enough, I'm dropping the gloves, let's go.
Yeah.
And I think that's
what
Biden was thinking about.
It was a hypothetical. Biden was like, if we were in high school, he wasn't saying going to punch the president now. He was saying if we were in high school, it was Uncle Joe doing his, But then, of course, Trump has to respond and go, oh, he go down sad and hard crying. It's like, oh, God. I mean, this is what's exhausting, right? It's just
that's the idea.
This constant tweeting and meanness and news cycles that are just...
That's the idea. In the meantime, he's stuffing the courts with hyper-conservative judges, and he's killing the Paris Agreement, and drilling offshore is suddenly permitted all up and down the shorelines of America. And everything that he can do to destroy what's been built over the last 50, 60, 70 years, he's doing, and creating distractions...
Yeah,
tweets
look over
and,
here.
And every possible thing he can do. He gets analyzed every day on the news, which bores the heck out of me. I'm just tired of analyzing what this guy's about and the attention he wants.
Who cares?
Who cares?
Get him the fuck out, man.
Who cares?
He's a cancer. I agree with John Brennan. He will be in the dustbin with other demagogues. He will not defeat us. I feel like... Richard, the courts, the body politic, we are rejecting him like a bad fucking organ. And I just have to hope that's true, that we, between Mueller and the courts and the voters, that this is not going to stand.
Well, it's going to be a fight.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fight.
Yeah. Listen, the main thing I love you for, not your Emmys and whatever, Richard. You coined the phrase President Bawbag.
It did.
Which went viral to a crazy extent. It's a Scottish for a scrotum. But
or a ball bag.
It's
quite literally.
President ball bag is, because I can't say the words president and then also the word Trump in succession, because he is not legitimately.
It's really hard to
so
listen.
So President ball bag, I think, is fantastic.
It's fair. Yeah, it's very fair. Yeah, the Scots, I think I could become the prime. Does Scotland have a prime minister? I could become the mayor of Scotland.
I think you could.
I could be because of this.
Where did that come from? How did you think of Bawbag? How did you think of President Bawbag?
There was all of these insult. There were demonstrations against his plans for another golf course in Scotland.
Oh,
and they,
right.
And
they're
this
like,
woman
you're a
was
cunt.
Holding up these signs.
Donald Trump's a cunt.
And I started tweeting. That's a good one. And blah blah blah. And then finally someone said, Bawbag. And I went, Bawbag! What a great word. And somebody said, you should hashtag President Bawbag. And I went, good idea. And I did. And then it went viral. It went, top 10 for weeks.
And now it's President Spanky. Jesus Christ.
Oh. President Bawbag.
Richard, what the fuck? All right, do you think there is actually... Don't tease us. Is there actually a reasonable chance that Aaron Sorkin is going to do the West Wing reboot?
I think there's a somewhat, there's a modicum of hope.
Oh, fantastic.
I would like to see it, but I don't know that it can happen.
Well, you guys are all really, really successful and busy, so that'll be hard, but let's do this for America.
We need to be inspired.
Richard Schiff.
What's that?
We need to be inspired again.
Yeah, well, if you're going to rely on a fictional television
show...
They're
going to do a new Roseanne. We need a new goddamn The West Wing, where goddamn President Bartlett is married to Sam Waterston. I need it, people. And I need it where Toby is dying of a brain cancer, but then it suddenly reverses itself. Fine.
Let's keep the brain cancer out of The West Wing, yes. If you don't mind. It's hard enough doing it on one show. I don't want to do it on another show.
Richard Schiff, you are an American treasure, sir. God bless you for doing this. How do we follow you and salute you and support you? How do we? What do we do?
Well, you can follow me as I go out the door. Is that what you mean?
See, he doesn't need
on
us.
Twitter?
On Twitter. He's fantastic on Twitter.
What am I? Rich, at Richard underscore...
Underscore Schiff.
S-C-H-I-F-F.
Yeah.
And I do kind of enjoy Twitter. I have to have to admit that.
He's fantastic on it. Follow him, worship him like we do.
Don't you find you read more stuff than you otherwise would read?
Yes. That's where I find out all what's
people
happening.
Send
I was
you
like,
stuff.
Am I fucking crazy? Oh no, this is what everyone else thinks about this too. Okay. Raise your glass. Richard fucking Schiff is here. Thank you, Richard.
That's my pleasure.